This week, my friends, I have a special collaborative episode to share with you. Not long ago, I came across the New Zealand-based podcast Sunday Sanctuary with Petra Baggist. This podcast quickly became a source of spiritual and creative nourishment for me. So as I do when I'm inspired, I reached out to Petra and asked if she would like to collaborate. And I'm glad to say that she said yes. Petra Baggist is a multi-talented Aotearoa New Zealand media personality, writer, and advocate. Her passion for creativity and ethical living resonates with the wildly diverse audience, making her one of New Zealand's most sought-after radio and television hosts since the 1990s. For the November 10th episode of her podcast, Sunday Sanctuary, I joined Petra to talk about poetry, creativity, and the different ways that noticing the small wonders of the world can reopen, restore, and change our lives. And here today on the Makers and Mystics podcast, Petra and I discuss the wonder found in culture, in storytelling, and in the gift of our elders. If you're a patron of the Makers and Mystics podcast, you can listen to our full conversation at patreon.com/makersandmystics. I'm your host, Stephen Roach, and this is Season 14, Episode 16, The Gift of the Elders. Petra, it's such an honor to have you with me today on the Makers and Mystics podcast.
Kia ora, it is an honor to be here. Thanks for finding me on the World Wide Web.
Oh, it's been one of the treasures of my recent days. Sunday Sanctuary, I'm a huge fan.
That's so cool. It's amazing, isn't it, this ability to be connected, and we speak so often about the potential loss or difficulty or destruction caused by social media or the sense of so much connection but so much division. And yet here we are intersecting with creators and makers on the other side of the globe, and it's a beautiful thing.
That's right. Now, you said kia ora, is that right?
I did, yes. Yeah, kia is to be, and ora is wellness or wholeness. So kia ora, kia ora is both a greeting, hello, it's be well, and it's also thank you in New Zealand, the Māori language. That's a greeting in Māori.
Wow, that's such a refreshing way of introducing yourself, rather than just what's up, you know?
Yeah, it's lovely, isn't it? It's like a blessing. You meet somebody and you say be well.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm curious to know about your background, both as an artist. I know you've also done a lot of work in television. Tell me a bit about your journey.
Okay. So I come from a long line of amateur painters. So my great-grandfather, my grandfather, my mother, myself and my daughter's actually graduating with a painting degree this year. And so I guess a visual orientation towards the world is part of my DNA. So how we dress in our family, how we decorate our homes, what we put in them, and artistic expression that's visual has been a deep part of how I move through the world. But I finished my painting degree and knew that I wouldn't be able to work in a room on my own. I'm just not designed that way. And so my part-time job was regional music TV, and I ended up getting a job in New Zealand on national television making youth shows, and that became a national, you know, mainstream media. And so for 20 plus years, I was a television presenter in New Zealand, known as a person of faith, and I ended up hosting breakfast shows as well as travel shows and renovation shows and all sorts of things. I got to try out so many different roles. So there was creativity in so much as you can make stuff with your words, or you can make stuff with a brush or with an instrument, or as it goes, you know, in the kitchen.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And so community has always been a huge part of your work.
Yes. I am, people say, oh, so are you addicted to anything? And I'm like, yeah, people. I really love us. We are infuriating and also so wildly, you know, creative and wonderful and full of possibility and surprising. Mm-hmm. So I guess my favourite thing about being a breakfast television host was this idea that days are hard, but that if we do them together, then surely that is a better way. Like, mm-hmm. we can almost do anything together. We're designed to live in community. And for New Zealand, we had a very strong COVID lockdown. And I remember being in our home with my family. And I was lucky we had seven in our home during lockdown because my parents were with us and our three children were at home. And I was like, this is just not enough community for me. Mm-hmm. Like, seven isn't enough. And seeing a friend from a distance and just that real pull of being in relationship and being inwoven and connected to others, it's a really strong driver for me.
Yes. Well, you know, this season on the podcast, as you know, we've been talking about this idea of reclaiming wonder. And I know in my own experience during lockdown, isolation was such a creativity killer. It was such a soul sucker.
Yeah.
And, you know, with you coming from this background as community, talk to me a bit about isolation and how that has impacted you in your own journey.
Well, on the introvert-extrovert scale, I would have been out of 10, probably a 15 on the extrovert scale. So I know that I didn't go home to my flat when, you know, I was at university or when I first got a job in Auckland. Mm-hmm. Before I was married and I was flatting. I don't know what they call it in America, but, you know, you're living with a bunch of young people in a house and you're having a great time and learning how to adult. And I literally wouldn't go home if there was no one home. So I didn't know how to be on my own. And I think one of the joys of aging has been coming alongside myself as somebody whose company I can enjoy, can be curious about, can lean into. And yet COVID was this kind of a wrenching separation from our communities. And so I think you're right, it was a creativity quasher. And it was like we were numbed or dulled. There was that sense of joy and wonder being dulled. For us, we had a brand new puppy in the house, and I remember that being like a gift from God. Mm. And I would go outside and play with this puppy who was so full of joy and who had no idea what a lockdown was. And so there's that sense of, there are still spaces where life continues, and yet, you know, to walk down a street and have everybody cross the road so they didn't come within 10 metres of you, it feels like rejection, right? And that was a season where, for me, that isolation solidified my deep love of my community in, for me, a profound way. I think there was a part of me who was like, is there a friend or is there something else out there? Is there someone I haven't met yet or a community I'm not part of yet that is better than what I've got, that is more exciting or dynamic or enlivening? And COVID made me gather my community and my friends into my heart and say thank you, thank you, thank you, and want to cherish them and deeply embrace who they were in all of their known ordinariness. So that isolation gave me, a real gift.
Mm-hmm. You know, I've often said to people that I'm a recovering radical individualist.
I hear you, brother. Tell me about that.
Yeah. Well, you know, I grew up on my own, by and large. I was by the age of 13, I was living like I was 21 in many ways. And I just always had this independent spirit, for good or for ill. But through my own season of isolation, I've also learned the beauty of interdependence, mm-hmm. you know, as opposed to a codependency, an interdependence, and just learning about our own nature that really does need one another. And that even creatively speaking, there are perspectives that you have that I need, and there are perspectives that I have that you need. And that's been one of the hallmarks of my own work as a creative community leader, as a poet, as a musician, is learning how to bring the beauty of collaboration together while at the same time honoring the beauty of our own individuality.
So true, right? So true. And for me, even as that self-confessed extrovert's extrovert, for me, freedom is to be able to be alone and know that I'm loved, to yes. be in company and be loving. Like, how do we say yes to the kind of full spectrum of humanity? Because you can be very, very lonely in company. You can That's feel right. like you don't belong, or you can just feel isolated and bereft, and you can feel so loved and held all by yourself, and vice versa, right? So there's this, I think there's a texture to coming home to your own skin, creatively, spiritually, emotionally, where you're willing to sit with the pleasure and pain of that whole spectrum of humanity. And COVID was how I felt about it was like it was magnifying health, both health and unhealth. So where I was unhealthy, it was putting the screws on that and raising the temperature on that. And where I was healthy, it was also revealing that. Mm-hmm. So it was quite enlightening.
Wow. Would you say that your Maori background is part of where your sense of community comes from?
Stephen, I wish I was Māori. I honestly have looked at my genealogy and gone, please, please let me be part of that DNA. And yet I am not. I'm known as a Pākehā European. So I am a white New Zealander who has engaged with the indigenous people of New Zealand, who are called Māori. Another name for them is Tangata Whenua, so people of the land. And an organisation I worked with went on a bicultural journey. And so we started learning te reo Māori, the language of Māori. And inside of language is culture. So the way a language is structured, the way it is unfolds, communicates to you about what that culture values and holds dear. And so something that I noticed in learning Māori was how there are so many pronouns. Every time I would speak to you, I would use a pronoun, a different pronoun if you and I were talking about someone, or if I was talking to you and someone else. Every time I would need to find the pronoun that basically revealed the relationship I had with both you and the person I was speaking of. And I was like, wow, this whole language is set up around relationship. And that was quite an awakening. And look, as a person who's had a faith for since I can remember, not that I didn't, you know, give my heart to the Lord in inverted commas about five or six times as a 10-year-old, every time a friend wanted to go up the front at Sunday school, I was like, yep, I'll come with you. But as a person of faith, learning a language and learning new words for or expressions of the Creator God, the divine, was like falling in love with my own faith again, or falling in love with life again, or falling in love with God again in a different way, because here was a window into a new way of seeing. So engaging with the culture of our tangata whenua, our people of the land, has been such a gift, and in so much as I wish I was Māori or part Māori, but I'm not.
Well, you speak it so fluently on the podcast. I assumed.
Yeah. No, I'm also a student of the language, mm-hmm. so I'm not conversational yet, but I'm committed to incorporating the language into every time I speak in public and every time I present or broadcast, because it is something that separates our part of the world from every other part of the world, and it's a gift. It's we would say a taonga, a treasure.
Mm-hmm. Well, you certainly have a way of honoring the heritages of your land, and I've noticed the care, and I've been inspired by the care and what I've learned about New Zealand and the people of the land. And you know, it's interesting because here in America, we often celebrate youth. We often celebrate the new, the shiny.
Beauty.
But even earlier, you talked about aging and the beauty of aging. And as I'm thinking about heritage, our elders, those who have gone before us, there's something about reclaiming wonder that's within that honoring of the heritage. What would you say about that?
I would say yes and amen. Like, what if honoring what Māori call kaumātua, or our elders, was low-hanging fruit? What if it was so simple that we could reorient our attitude towards our elders and just open a Pandora's box of goodness? Even the word we use here in New Zealand is, oh, the elderly, you know, like those people who are older, and like you can, I'm showing my hand as like flapping behind my back, like those guys back there. And yet to honour elders, not for their economic prowess now, and not for the thing that they're going to discover or invent or reveal, but rather for the wisdom, for the lived experience. I feel like so often, even as a parent, I would potentially discount what I have to say because I might not be as quick digitally or as onto it technically. You cannot gain life experience and wisdom without living. So it doesn't matter whether I can operate platforms effectively and efficiently. That never diminishes my lived experience or my wisdom. So I believe that we're invited in this season to start to treat our elders the way that we want to be treated. Like, they are literally our future self. So where in the world would we, like, what are we teaching the young people, the youth of our own cultures, if we continue to dismiss and discard elders? We are saying, this is how you can treat me in the future. We are literally, I think, almost abusing our future selves. We are like, we're writing our future selves off. And I had a discussion on the radio this morning with a man who said that the thing that he fears is irrelevance. And I said, what is it about that? Like, can you lean into that with curiosity? Can you redefine what relevance is? And he said, oh, it's the fact that I will have no value when I'm older, I'm discarded. And I thought, can we now turn towards our elders, imagining our future selves, and begin to honour or revere or raise up wisdom, maturity? And look, I saw a woman on a stage in Australia, and she goes, oh, I think I'm the oldest person on the stage, heaven forbid, or what a terrible thought. And I wanted to get on the stage because I was going to be up speaking soon and say, I think I might be the oldest person on the stage. That's so exciting. Mm. And I didn't, because that would be exposing her. But when we honour people of maturity, when we reorient our language around ageing, we literally throw open the doors of possibility and can seek the goodness of that season. There's plenty of goodness in that season.
You know, it brings to mind a story from my own childhood. And my father was a third generation fiddle player from the Appalachian Mountains. And bluegrass music has always been a part of my family experience. And I have several really well-known family members in the bluegrass world. But my dad, I remember him saying to me one time, you know, it was this phrase, you have to have something to fall back on.
Yeah.
Because once you age, no one's going to care about your music anymore. When you age, the crowd is going to move on to the next great thing.
Wow.
And so it was almost this sense that music was only for the youth. And it was so surprising to come from him, because he was a third generation fiddle player. Music had been passed down to him from his father, his grandfather. But yet somewhere in his experience, he had been taught, well, once you reach a certain age, you have nothing else to offer. And I think it's interesting because, at least here in America, we can have this mindset, and I've seen some of the elderly people in my own life, they think that as we get older, there's a loss of wonder, or life experience becomes smaller, and so there's less that we have to offer. But yet, I think the opposite is true, is that elders are reservoirs of wonder.
Yeah, wholeheartedly agree. I remember somebody, I described a friend who lives, she's an artist, she's a painter, and she lives in a kind of a 10K radius, and she's very she's a profoundly hard worker, and she's like somebody who's being refined by fire and hasn't had this external kind of worldly success. And the friend commented and said, oh, she lives quite a narrow life. And I said, oh, no. No, she doesn't live a small or narrow life. She lives a deep life. She's mined and dug down into this space of creativity. And, yeah, her spirituality is deep. Her art is deep. And if we're able to expand our narrative on what is wonderful, what is full of wonder, then it's outside our very door. It's the touch of a leaf. Like, have you, you know, you're walking the street and then you see a hedge and you just brush your hand along the hedge and the rhythm, the leaves hit your fingers in a certain way, or you see a flower and you're like, oh, the beauty of that bud. And I think that we can restrict wonder to something massive or new or shiny. And elders teach us that wonder is at our fingertips, and wonder is, yeah, just closer than a brother. I don't know, just yes. Close at hand,
yes.
Available. Yeah.
I love this. We need elders. We need the storytellers.
We do.
And speaking of storytellers, I see you as a storyteller. Would you define yourself that way? It seems like a lot of your work is you embody the stories of the people of your land. And that's what I get even from Sunday Sanctuary, is that you're helping the stories to be told.
Oh, that's such a lovely way of putting it. Oh, I receive that. Thank you for that. I do remember a couple of years ago kind of having the sense that I could be somebody who told parables or tales. In effect, I feel in this season like I'm somebody who could hold space for stories.
Yes.
So rather than being always the storyteller, I would be perhaps a story collector or a story space maker.
Yes.
And I love that idea of not having to have the answers. Mm-hmm. I love this. The sense of wonder for me increases when I partake of other people's stories, when I sit with them and hear what they have to say and go, oh, I'd never thought of it like that.
Yes.
How wonderful. And what a relief. What a relief not to have to have the answers, isn't it?
It is. I've been thinking about that a lot lately in terms of liminal space. Because, for instance, on my phone here, any question we have, we can Google this answer, right? And I'm thankful for that, you know? But at the same time, there's something about gestating. There's something about abiding in the space between the question and the answer. For me, that's where we can find wonder.
Oh, yeah.
It's to give ourselves time to cultivate that curiosity and to begin to mull over things and not be so quick to rush to the answers.
Oh, I'm with you. And how quickly we do want the answer. How quickly we want to close the tab on that, you know, mental computer of ours. Let's close that tab, move on, let's get that answer with, okay, yep, done, tick, solved, finished. Okay, what was that person's name? What was it? Yep, okay, good. And when you're talking about liminal space, you know, there are whole kind of wonderings and theories about, even, Stephen, the space between you and I now. Mm-hmm. You're sitting in North Carolina, your land is in pain, mm-hmm. your people are in pain. And I'm sitting in New Zealand and we're on the cusp of summer and we're in a space of, you know, changeable seasons and yet there is the space between us where we are both reaching with our words and with our hearts towards one another. So the space between us is our relationship, and what can we create in that space?
Yes.
And so making friends with mystery is, oh, it's such a relief and it's such a joy, because then we literally don't have to have all the answers. We never can have them. But to release ourselves from needing or desiring to have all the answers. I remember experience I had. We have a garden on a small island just off the city of Auckland where I live. It's about half an hour plane ride or a 4.5 hour ferry ride to an island called Eltia, that's the Maori name, or Great Barrier Island. And I was sitting outside the caravan that we've got on our garden and looking at a blood moon, like it was a lunar eclipse, was it, or a solar eclipse. And I was sitting there watching slowly as this eclipse happened. And it was taking ages. And I thought, you know what? I was really frustrated. You know what? There's not even going to be like drums and cymbals at the end of it. There'll be no like, da-da! It's just the slow, eerily silent occurrence. And as the blood moon happened, as the sun completely shadowed the moon and the moon went orangey, and the light of the moon was dimmed, and I looked around at the sky and the stars all kind of, you know, just sort of broke out. Their brightness was intensified. And I was like, oh, wow. It took the glory of the moon to be shrouded for the stars to be revealed. There's something in this. And I felt like I was experiencing a kind of a palpable aha moment. And I had no idea what it meant. And to this day, I'm not sure if I've understood what that experience means to my life, but I hold it.
Yes.
And occasionally I take it out and I look at it and I'm like, what is it about that moon? What is it about the shrouding of the glory? Like, what is that? And then I pop it back in my pocket or my heart or wherever it lives, you know?
Yes.
And I'm like, okay, I'll continue to sit with it and to wait and to be curious and open.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Such a beautiful story. I told you were a storyteller.
Oh gosh, you're too kind.
Well, Petra, this has been such a beautiful conversation. I just have one last question for you, and that is, where are you finding wonder in your present day experience? Is there some place of wonder in your own life right now, or some even advice that you would give to our community on new ways that they can open up wonder in their life? Whether it's, we've talked about engaging with our elders, we've talked about the interdependence of community. What would you leave our listeners with?
Oh, I love that. It's a very invitational question. I know that for myself, there's this really strong sense of coming home, even to how I was as a child, to having compassion for even my former self that I might have judged or critiqued or wrestled with. Like, I know that as a person who had a family that had high expectations and maybe leant towards perfectionism, that there was this sense of never quite being enough or never measuring up. And so I critiqued myself a lot, like, you're useless, Petra, why didn't you do this? Why didn't you learn? When will you ever? And so all of those things, I think, are creativity inhibitors. And in paying attention, not in a navel-gazing kind of a way, but in paying attention to where a spark of joy, which could be felt as a lightness or a warmth or just paying attention to the felt sense. So for me, that is touching nature. It's literally brushing my hands against different textured leaves and plants. It is walking on the footpath and not standing on the cracks. It's like bouncing between tiles or making a pointless pattern in the way I walk. It is letting my body move to music that kind of vibrates inside of me. So very, very simple, daily accessible activities that allow me to, I guess, sip wonder, so that when I'm in a more intentional environment, like creating a podcast or interviewing or listening or being with a person, then that wonder reservoir is it's flowing, you know, it's not stagnant. And I think there's something about the ease that is a clue. Where does wonder show up easily? And can I trust the ease? Because our wisdom text says, my burden is easy and my yoke is light. What if prayer is breathing? Worship is noticing. Creating is engaging with another person and creating a conversation. Like, yes. And it can be more than that, but it can be that too. Yeah.
So beautiful. Petra, thank you for sharing your heart with me today. Thank you for joining me on the Makers and Mystics podcast.
Kia ora. It's been such a pleasure, Stephen. Thank you for creating a space and for, ngā mihi nui ki a koe. Many thanks to you for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Makers and Mystics podcast. This episode was produced by me, Stephen Roach, with music provided by Somewhere at Sea. Be sure to see the show notes for links to our episode on Sunday Sanctuary and to join the Makers and Mystics Creative Collective. If you've been inspired by this podcast, please consider helping us continue our work by leaving a kind review on Apple Podcasts or by offering your monthly support. We'll see you again next week, and until then, keep creating. The world needs your art.